You are listening to episode number 65 of the Secondary Science Simplified podcast. My first official teaching job was at a public 4A school with over 50% of the students below the poverty line. Those first 2 years of teaching at that school in a city were hard, but I also loved where I was and I had great respect for my administration. I never wanted to leave. I loved the school. I loved my coworkers. Honestly, I loved the district that I was in. But 2 years into my teaching career, my husband got a promotion and that was going to move us across the state. And so when I traveled down to do some interviews, I was so beyond blessed to receive job offers at both the local public high school and a private Christian school. And making the decision between the two was truly one of the hardest decisions of my life because the public school in this new town was a lot different from the public school in my previous area that I was living. It was a lot smaller. It was a whole different atmosphere with the admin. The district was really different. And so I knew that I couldn't just go into that public school job expecting it to be the same because it was going to be really different. And so instead, I decided to try something totally new. And I went with the private Christian school for a couple of reasons, which I'll share later. And now I'm so thankful for that decision. I'm just so grateful for the diverse experiences I had between those two different teaching opportunities. But I'm going to be honest, the first year at the private school was rough. I would argue to say it may have been harder than my first year teaching. And so I'm telling you this because I know that many of you are approaching contract season, meaning the time of year where you're going to be receiving your contract for the next school year and then deciding if you're going to sign it or not. And I want to help you make that decision. And so the next few weeks, we're going to do episodes that will hopefully help with that. And so if you are considering making a switch to a new school next year, then this episode is for you. I'm going to share with you 10 questions to consider as you evaluate the different options you may have for schools to teach in. And these are all based on my experience of making this decision myself and kind of 10 things I really thought through. I'm also going to share just some really specific and honestly personal insights if you're considering making the leap from public to private or vice versa. And I know that you can't generalize, like not all public schools are the same and not all private schools are the same at all. So I just want to preface with that, but I do want to be honest with you and as transparent as possible about some of the challenges I experienced in the public school I taught in versus the private school I taught in. And hopefully that'll just give you some things to think on and chew on and just decide what will be best for you and for your family and for your lifestyle. Okay, so I hope this will be helpful for you. Let's just go ahead and dive right in. This is Secondary Science Simplified, a podcast for secondary science teachers who want to engage their students and simplify their lives. I'm Rebecca Joyner from It's Not Rocket Science. As a high school science teacher turned curriculum writer, I am passionate about helping other science teachers love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. Are you ready to rock the time you spend in your classroom and actually have a life outside of it? You are in the right place, teacher friend. Let's get to today's episode. Okay, before we get started, I just want to start by saying that I know that every school has its issues. And so I want to encourage you to not always assume that the grass will be greener on the other side. Every school has its pros, every school has its cons. There's no perfect situation. And as I got space away from the school that I first taught in, which was a school that I loved, like I had such a great experience there. But getting space from that, I really started to see some of the things that weren't as great about it and vice versa when I was at my new school. So I just want to encourage you that every school is so different. And I really think it's important to evaluate every school that you consider and really over time, reevaluate like every few years, especially if you're in a school where admin is changing with frequency. Like you need to evaluate every 2 or 3 years if this is the right place for you. And maybe even every year if there's a lot of transition and a lot of change. So I want to encourage you with that. I also want to encourage you that no perfect school exists. So we just want to look at what will be best for you and your family in the current season that you are in, because that's a theme we've been talking about so far in 2023. Okay. And my hope is just that these 10 reflection questions that I walked through will just help you as you're talking through these decisions, you know, with your partner, with your spouse, whatever. Okay. Now, disclaimer. I'm going to share some of my personal experiences just to serve as examples for you. I don't want you to think that I'm generalizing my school experiences, for all school experiences. I just feel like it is helpful to have specific examples. So I'm going to share those from my experience. And I'm also going to try not to come off as negative, because I really had great experiences at both schools in really different ways, but they also both had their challenges. But I am going to be very transparent. And I think sometimes transparency can feel, you know, a little harsh, but that's where I'm going to be. So despite some of the downfalls of the schools that I've taught in, I've just grown to love them in different ways, like I said. And so that's where I want to just preface this by saying I love both schools in very different ways. Okay, enough with the preface. Let's dive into the questions. First thing I want you to consider, what are the different duties or weekly expectations of teachers that are required? Okay, what's required of you on a weekly basis in terms of duties? I know for me, at my public school, I just had a lot of meetings. Like I was constantly in a meeting with, you know, my department, analyzing data or rewriting a department-wide test we were required to do. Or I was in an IEP evaluation meeting, or I had a random professional development. We had weekly faculty meetings. You know, there were a lot of meetings. I also had a hall duty every day for 30 minutes of my planning. Okay, I did get a 90-minute planning period because we were on a block schedule. So that was amazing. 90 minutes every day is amazing. If you are in that situation, really consider whether or not you want to walk away from it, because when you drop to 45 or 50 minute planning, it's difficult. But I will say in that 90 minutes, I had to spend 30 of it in the hall. You know, not the end of the world. It's not like there was a lot going on during hall duty. It was just checking people's hall passes. But I still had to, you know, it's not like I could be prepping a lab during that time. I had to be grading papers or something like that. So I had a lot of meetings there. Whereas on the other hand, at my private school, we maybe met twice a month for like a 30-minute faculty meeting. And then we had like devotions as a faculty on Tuesday mornings before school, but those were like 10 minutes tops. So I do feel like I had a lot more free time in terms of freedom from meetings. And I was able just to like get things done in my classroom. And, you know, we weren't getting a lot of emails throughout the day. That was another thing at my public school. We would get a lot of emails throughout the day and they expected you to check them. And I was like, this is crazy. I don't have time to check my email every 5 seconds. And luckily I had a lot of teacher neighbors close to me. And so, you know, if there was something they sent in an email, like we have an emergency meeting after school, we would kind of check in on each other and be like, hey, did you see that? We got to make sure we're there. One thing I loved about private school is they never did that. I was never bothered by emails. And if something came up like, hey, just FYI, we're going to end up, we weren't planning on it, but we're going to do a fire drill now during fourth period. Like my admin would walk around to each classroom and just tell us. And I loved that because I love any opportunity to disconnect from my inbox and unplug from technology. So that's something I want you to consider. And these are the types of questions. I guess I should have said this at the beginning, but here we are. I feel like these are the really good questions for when you are sitting in those interviews, if you get to the point where you're going to be interviewing at other schools. And I feel like there's always a place in the interview where they're like, you know, what questions do you have for me? These are the types of questions that you might consider asking just to get a good idea of what you're walking into. So I would definitely ask, what are the duties or weekly expectations of teachers? What's required there? The second thing I would ask or look for potentially on the internet, you could probably find it if it's a public school, is what's this pay scale increase like? At my public school, it was a very consistent salary schedule or table. I don't know how you want to refer to it. You could literally Google it and find it right now. It was published on the internet. So you saw that, you know, if I have X amount of education, I teach X amount of years, this is how much I'm going to be paid. And it was very, very clear. That was nice in the sense that like we knew how to budget. There was no unknowns. We knew this is how much I was going to be making. It was nice when I did finish my master's degree, which I did my first 2 years teaching at night, to know like, okay, this is the raise I can expect, even though we ended up moving to a new school before I was able to enjoy that raise. But that was really nice to see it clearly defined and known. But I will also say it was also very rigid. You know, there weren't going to be any changes to that. Whereas in my private school, it was kind of no guarantees because they didn't make any promises. I will say the nice thing was I was given an offer initially that was going to be less than I would make at the public school. And I was able to negotiate and say, hey, I need to make the same that I could be making down the street at the public school. And that was a possibility. But I also was not guaranteed a pay raise each year like I was at public school. So yeah, I could negotiate on the front end, but then it kind of was stagnant after that with a little, I think there was a little bump, maybe year two or three for cost of living, but that was it. Okay. So I will say there's no, you know, rhyme or reason necessarily there. But there also was the potential long-term, if I needed to negotiate a higher salary in order to stay there, that would be a possibility. We know we kind of got into some of those discussions when I was planning on leaving the classroom to stay home with my oldest when we adopted him. You know, there were some negotiations there to get me to stay, but at the end of the day, I just was like, I really wanted to be home with him. I mean, you know, since he was adopted, I already missed the first, you know, 9 months of his life growing in the womb. So I just didn't want to miss that time with him in those early days. And so there was no number I could have put on that. But I will just say, I say all this to say, private school felt like a lot of inconsistency, which could be good or bad. Public school felt very consistent and very clear, but that's also very rigid and there's no wiggle room. So just something to consider looking into. Another question I would ask would be, what opportunities are there for my position to grow and evolve over the years? I felt like in the public school I was in, you know, there was a lot of politicking, if you will. Like I knew if I ever wanted to teach anything but freshman biology and physical science, I'd have to put in my time and put in some schmoozing with the admin and kind of wait my turn. Like I knew that AP biology or anatomy or, you know, being in charge of the teacher cadet program, which I thought sounded so fun. All of those were things I would have to wait in line for because there were other teachers ahead of me, you know, that were waiting for the teacher in that position to move to a different school or retire. I also knew in my public school that part-time was not going to be an option when I had children. Like that was just something that was very, very clear to us. And again, it was just a very rigid system, but it was clear. So that helped me know for planning purposes. Whereas when I was in a private school for 4 years, my role changed every single year I was there, and I loved that. And it also just developed, and I could see how I could develop that role into maybe some sort of admin role or into an instructional coach. Or, you know, they were willing to let me do half days, which is so, so rare in a public school system. And so that's something I want you to consider also, is what's kind of the flexibility there. And then also, like with AP Biology, I had the ability to teach AP Biology pretty quickly after being there. It's not like I had to put in a bunch of time to get it. I was able to be very honest about, like, you know, what classes I want to teach, kind of what my hopes would be for the long term. And I'm excited too, because, you know, if and when I do get back into the classroom one day, it will most likely be in a part-time capacity. And I feel like I can reach out to them because we have such a great relationship still and kind of see what's available. So for me personally, I liked, and when I was making this decision for my new job, I chose a private school specifically so that I could have that flexibility. My career would not feel as stagnant. And I knew that I could have some kind of professional growth, you know, on my own terms and not just based on waiting in line for another teacher to retire so I can teach the class that they have. So that's something to consider as well. The fourth question I would ask would be, what professional development and certificate renewal options are available? Okay, so this is something I've told my husband so many times. I am so thankful that I spent my first 2 years in the public school system. And so this may look different in the state that you teach in, but the way that it worked at the time in South Carolina is you get your initial teaching certificate, you know, when you graduate college with your teaching degree and you take your praxis, you know, exams for certification, all that. You get like a preliminary certificate. And then your first 2 years in the classroom, you have to get a certain amount of professional development hours and you have to make this giant binder that's like a portfolio of all these different things. I mean, there's so many things to it in order to then be granted your professional certificate. And then your professional certificate, you know, gives you like 5 years and you have to get 120 renewal hours and to keep renewing it every 5 years or something like that. But I'm super grateful because the process to get from the initial to the professional was really tedious. And luckily in my school, I mean, there was probably 8 of us that were new the year I started there, my first year teaching. My school walked us through that entire process. They provided professional development for us that counted towards the state requirements. They also, you know, pointed us to opportunities where we could get the other hours we needed. You know, I had an advisor at my school that helped me with my binder to make sure I had all the pieces I needed to get my formal certificate. And then it was so nice because from then on, I knew I had this professional certificate and all I had to do was keep it renewed. Whereas, you know, if I had started at a private school, it would have been all on me to potentially get, you know, my formal certificate and keep that up. So I'm super grateful I'd gotten to the point where I had at least gotten that professional certificate before I left. So that's something to consider. Whereas private school, because there aren't as many requirements for PD, then there's not that much necessarily available to you. So it was all kind of on me, which in some like instances is great. Like none of the professional development that my private school provided was wasted. Like, it was all very applicable, very relevant. It was very much catered to our smaller faculty. A lot of our PD would be one teacher basically teaching for 30 minutes on something that was working in their classroom and how we could apply it to our classrooms. It was awesome, but none of it was recognized or accredited by the state. So all of the PD that I was doing at my private school, which wasn't very much because we didn't do a lot of it, but what we were doing wasn't counted by my state towards my renewal credits. So I had 5 years to get 120 renewal hours on my own, and I've been able to do it, and now I've got another 5 years, but you know, it's tricky. And so there's a lot of conversations that came that I had to spend on the phone with the State Department of Education, you know, which is not fun. And I've had to pay for some PD opportunities that have been not relevant or helpful to my teaching career at all, but I just had to do it to get my renewal. And so that's just something to consider as well. Like, I know that my public school had so much more support for keeping my hours up. It was like something I didn't even have to think of, whereas private school kind of came all on me. So that's something I would ask too as well. And again, this may be different for the public and private school where you're considering, or if you're looking at two different public schools, maybe they're two different districts though, because you live on the border of two different school districts. They may do things differently. And so that's where I just want to encourage you to ask these types of things. Like, are you going to be responsible for finding all the opportunities to renew your certificate, or are they going to help you do that? If you're a teacher coming to the education field, you know, as a second career, and maybe you're doing an alternative certification path, like, how are they going to support you in that? Or do they not? So just some questions to consider. Okay, my fifth thing I want you to think about is what support is provided for higher education. So my state offers a lot of scholarship opportunities for current teachers in the public school system who want to pursue higher ed. So we were constantly getting forwarded emails from our district and from our admin, you know, about a discounted program through this university or, you know, something here. I was able to get gifted and talented certified through a local college by taking two online classes for like $150 my second year teaching. And it was through a sponsorship program that my admin had sent me. And so that was such a gift. Whereas when I taught at private school, a lot of those opportunities weren't available to me because they are held specifically for public school teachers. And my school obviously encouraged me to do whatever I wanted to do, but they weren't able to financially support me in getting my master's, or it's always been my dream to get a doctorate. That's not something that they would be able to support me in. And I don't think my public school could have either, but it's just, again, something to consider. I feel like I've said that so many times. Maybe I should title this podcast Something to Consider, because that's all I keep saying. Okay, question number six, what's the faculty environment like? You know what? And this is really helpful if you can actually talk to someone who currently teaches at the school to really get the scoop. This is something you're not going to really be able to feel out from an interview, but I would see what the deal is and still ask, you know, what are the expectations for collaboration and kind of things like that? That's something you could ask in your interview. Because when I was at a public school, I was one of five biology teachers. So I constantly had a work community, which was amazing as a first year teacher. My job was extremely collaborative and the work environment was very social for me, which was also draining because I'm an introvert. But it was very social. It was very fun. It was exactly what I needed. The community was really encouraging, but it could also be really distracting because there were so many of us and we were constantly talking all day long and planning together and all of that. And, you know, of the five of us that worked together, I really jived with one other teacher who is Jamie. I had her on the podcast. She was one of the first people I interviewed. I love her so much. And then, you know, I got along with two or three others, but there's always kind of one that's, you know, not really participating in the group project. And so that was hard. Like, that's where collaborative work environments are awesome, but they can be really hard if not everyone's collaborating. So that's something to kind of think through. If that sounds like something you need in this season of your life, like, do you need some collaboration and support, or do you just need to be able to go rogue? Because that's what I loved about my private school. I was the only teacher who taught my subject areas, which is kind of sad, but it's also awesome because you can do whatever you want. You can literally run with anything because you don't have to report to anyone else. I will say though, it made my first year at that school really lonely. I felt like I didn't have anyone bouncing ideas off of, and I'd been so used to that. And I also felt like it was harder to build relationships because every person who was on my floor and in my hallway taught a different subject. So it's not like we were ever naturally crossing paths to like share ideas and collaborate. You know, we would chat, of course, but it wasn't the same level at all. So that's something to consider. I also will say though, I felt Like, I had amazing admin at both schools. I love my admin so much and coworkers, but I will say I felt like the atmosphere at my private school felt a lot more positive than at my public school. And I'm super grateful for that encouragement, especially because in the years that I was at the private school was when we were experiencing our unexplained infertility diagnosis and walking through that and then walking through the adoption process. Like, we had a lot going on in our personal lives. I lost my grandmother unexpectedly, and she was one of the people that really raised me. So we had a lot going on, but I'm so glad I was in that atmosphere for that. So I would just really try to get a read on what the faculty environment is like. Question number 7 to consider, how many preps do most teachers have and how much planning time is there? I mentioned this earlier, but like a 90-minute planning period versus a 50-minute, night and day different. Like, it's life-changing. When I was at public school, I taught physical science CP and honors and then biology CP and honors. But I only taught 2 of those a semester because we were on semester block planning. So I never had more than 2 preps really at a time. And then I had 90-minute planning every day. It was awesome. I love semester block and getting new students in January. I thought that was like the greatest ever. The only bummer is if a kid gets sick and misses like 3 days of school, it's like they've missed almost a half a unit, you know, because you're covering so much in 90-minute periods. But I loved that. Whereas at my private school, I had physical science CP and honors, biology CP and honors, AP biology, and a Bible course at one time. That was like the most plannings I ever had at one experience. And I only had 50 minutes to plan. And again, only person teaching all this stuff. So no one to bounce ideas off of. It was a lot. And I had those students 50 minutes every day all year. And so the nice thing is if like you get sick and you're out and you're just missing one day, like you barely have to leave any sub plans because they don't get that much done without you in 50 minutes. But it was very hard to have that little prep time for that many preps. Okay, question number 8. What guidelines and resources are used for developing curriculum at this school? So when I was in my public school first year teaching job, it was amazing to walk into a school that had this group of teachers writing their curriculum and have it literally handed to me what they were doing. But I will say once I got started, it was hard because I had a lot of things I wanted to do differently. And there were things in the curriculum that I did not like, that I did not think were explained well, that I thought, you know, this lab could be replaced with something so much better. And it was frustrating that I was kind of restricted to what the group wanted to do and also restricted by what the district was requiring. It felt like 3 or 4 times while I was there, there was some new district initiative that was pushed out and mandated. And it was like we were constantly just having to change what we were doing to adopt whatever new initiative was in place. And that's tiring to not have any flexibility. It's nice to have everything handed to you, but really big bummer if you're not allowed to make any changes to it. And so that was one of the reasons why I was most attracted to the private school teaching offer when I had both and when we moved. I walked into that private school and I was given absolutely nothing other than a link to the NGSS standards. That was literally it. If I had been a first year teacher, that honestly would have been semi-traumatizing. I would not have known where to begin. But coming in as a third year teacher who is fresh out of grad school, getting a master's in curriculum design, plus I had, you know, 2 years of experience really seeing what I liked and what I really didn't like working on a team and the curriculum that they had come up with, I was so excited for this job. Like, this was my dream. I had so much passion for curriculum design and I was ready to start writing my own curriculum from scratch. Like, I was so here for this. I love the autonomy. I love to be able to be as creative as I wanted. It was awesome for me in that season. Again, I don't know if I'd want to be in that season with a new baby or first year teaching. So things to consider for your own season. Okay, 2 more. Thanks for hanging with me. And let's see if I can finish this episode without saying things to consider again. Okay, that's going to be my goal, these next 2 questions I pose for you. So question number 9, what differences are there in parent and student culture? Okay, I want you to just kind of try to get a read on the parent culture and the student culture. Again, if you can talk to someone who's currently teaching at this school, that's going to be your best way to get insight on this. But I felt like when I was in public school, the students could be amazing or really, really challenging to deal with. There was a lot of diversity there in what we were dealing with. And then the parents were borderline non-existent. I still had to call them all of the time and document it as part of my job, but I never saw any support from the home front and very rarely criticism. I had like 1 or 2 parents it got a little dicey with. But other than that, like, that was just like not even part of my job. It was almost just like, okay, check it off the list. You called them, now move on. Whereas private school, holy cow. I found it really hard to deal with the entitlement of the students coming from my experience in the public school. It was so different. And that attitude was really, really hard for me. My first year teaching, I had a student that was not passing. And I told him, like, you literally will not pass this class. I need, like, what can we do? Let's partner. Let's do this. And I told him, I was like, I want to bring in your parents and, like, let's get on the same page so you can pass this class and not retake it. And at the time, no one had ever failed physical science at my school. No eighth grader had ever failed an eighth grade course before. And so they didn't even have a protocol for how to handle that moving into high school. And I will never forget, this student looked at me, and I'm just gonna, to for privacy's sakes, let's say that his dad's name was Casey. And he said, what Casey wants, Casey gets. If Casey doesn't want me to fail this class, I'm not gonna fail this class. And my jaw literally dropped. I was like, what? But I think there was this mentality, since parents were investing so much financially in their children's education, that they had a lot of control. And so that was really difficult for me. But also, parents were just so much more involved. I mean, I was talking to parents every single day at my private school teaching job, which was crazy because it was so different from what I experienced before. And so the nice part, though, in that is that you do have parents you can partner with, and actually having those conversations with them does change students' behavior and work ethic. The hard part is you're going to have to devote way more time to interact with parents, you know, email or face-to-face or whatever. And you're also going to have to deal with some of those entitlement issues, potentially. You know, I don't want to say for sure that's what it will be like for you, but for me, that was a really big difference. And I felt like I kind of had to earn some respect at the school before parents and students stopped trying to, like, kind of walk over me, if you will. I will say too, I had 18 parent conferences my first month at this school. Y'all, that's a lot, especially for someone who had maybe had two in the 2 years previously and, like, had never really spent much time with parents. So I learned a lot, and I learned it the hard way. But also, you know, it was a really good learning experience for me. And once I kind of built those relationships and that rapport with parents, it was awesome to have them on my side. But at first, it was a lot, and the student attitudes were a lot too. Okay, last thing I want you to consider. Oh, man. I said it. I said I was going to try not to say it again. Okay, last thing I want you to think about, okay, is how will this affect my retirement and benefits, okay? For me personally, this was a non-issue because the way my husband and I had set up our retirement and we started investing in that when we first got married, I wasn't planning on being dependent on any benefits from my school or school district. And I will say too, I didn't have great benefits or anything in that regard. So I know some of you are in states where, like, the pension is awesome if you can make it 25 years. So you're going to be a lot more motivated by this than I was. And then I will also say too, for insurance purposes, I was on my husband's insurance. So switching schools in that regard didn't affect me either. But that's something, of course, that you will have to consider. I know a lot of my public school coworkers thought that I was crazy to switch to private school and lose some of those benefits. But I also kind of always knew in the back of my mind, I wasn't going to be in the public school system for 25 years to get a lot of those retirement benefits anyway. You know, I had done my master's in curriculum design. I loved it. It's on my bucket list to get my doctorate. I would love to teach at the college level. So this was before I even started ASN Rocket Science. And I just knew that that probably wasn't my long term. So that wasn't a big decision factor for me. But that's something you are going to want to think through. At the end of the day, you just have to weigh out the positives and negatives for, again, for you and your family and your priorities. And remember that no school will be perfect and have every single thing that you want and need. But it's your job just to assess what's most important to you in your current season of life, because I truly believe that different seasons call for different things. And if you need to switch schools a few times, that's okay. And stay tuned, because over the next few weeks, we're going to continue this conversation. You can always come back to this episode and re-listen to those 10 questions again if you want, or check the show notes at itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/episode65. We'll have all 10 of these questions just listed out there for a quick reference if you're trying to look back and reflect on those. And again, we're going to keep unpacking this over the next few weeks for those of you considering switching schools or even leaving the education field, you know, and taking a break from it. So stick with me. I'm here for you in this transitional season. And if you have any specific questions about this conversation, please reach out and let me know how I can serve you as you're maybe making this decision, you know, for you and your family right now. I really just want you to know that I want to support you in this because I've been there. You know, I've switched schools and I've left, you know, a traditional teaching job for a little bit. So I know where you're at and I'm here for you. All right, teacher friends, that wraps up today's episode. If you're looking for an easy way to start simplifying your life as a secondary science teacher, head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/challenge to grab your classroom reset challenge. And guess what? It's totally free. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you here next week. Until then, I'll be rooting for you, teacher friend.